Welcome. Everyone but me. Damn. That's a bit loud, isn't it? Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulous AmericanFreedomRadio.com platform here. We actually have real AM/FM stations that pick up this show and many others all across America and around the world. And we use the platform to try and give people a little bit of exposure for these very important and interesting ideas and experiences that they've all had. Now, I believe my guest today is Eugene Sonny Irvin. Eugene, welcome to the program. Eugene, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine, Vinny. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. There seems to be a little bit of a delay and problems with your Skype there. We'll chuck you on the phones after this segment is over, if there's still a problem. But anyway, yeah. Would you please divulge just a little bit about yourself and what it is you do?
Sure. my name is Eugene Irvin, and my father's CIA history led to my subsequent involvement in a classified research and development project, namely Project Pegasus, which you guys may be familiar with the work of Andrew Bishago and some others. The current emphasis of my research is on mind control and the effects of that in our society today. And we've uncovered some very disheartening things and stuff that we can overcome together when we have a voice to stand together. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. And, you know, the nature of the project in which I was on as a child and grew up, you know, basically, you know, participating in to varying degrees and involves quantum access technologies and exopolitical relations. And for the layman, that means time travel and aliens. So, you know, that's kind of what the brunt of my stuff is. You know, my father went to seminary to become a priest, and went on to have an extensive intelligence-based military career. And he led the failed Senate campaign for George Bush Sr., the former American president and head of the CIA. That was back in 1970 when that Senate campaign was actually, you know, when he ran for Senate. And my father was also a patent holder on a device which equated to hundreds of millions of dollars on an annual basis, which wouldn't see its way into the pockets of oil company executives and people like George Bush Sr. So there's an obvious conflict of interest there. And, you know, the device is called the Pazer 500. It's an acronym like laser. It's P-A-S-E-R 500. And what it does is basically harness wasted electromagnetic energy from the internal combustion engine and allows it to run more smoothly. It gives a performance increase. But most importantly, it reduces the emissions, sometimes almost nil, and it increases the fuel economy by up to 2/3 in some vehicles and under some conditions. And so, clearly one of the other many, many suppressed technologies, and had it been utilized properly, simply would have resulted in a much cleaner environment for us today. And so, you know, there's a strong environmental aspect to the way that I think and what I do, and I've grown up understanding kind of the crooked ways of the system. My dad was a private pilot for George Bush Sr., okay? So, you know, I've been privy to some things, I think, in my life that a lot of people aren't. And
Like heroin smuggling?
Oh, God, give me a break. You're absolutely right. You know, it's terrible what has been done. And, you know, I'm quite proud of the fact that my father actually led the failed Senate campaign for that mass murderer. You know, I don't endorse it, certainly not the Bush family. You know, it's clear that he played a role in the suppression of this device, which was marketed in 70 countries, et cetera. You know, all kinds of stuff to go along with that. So, you know, of course, these guys bring in the drugs and all this kind of other stuff and torture people, and God knows what they do. And so, you know, I'm not quite sure what to say to that about the heroin question. I guess it was a joke, but you know, you're absolutely right.
There's a reason why his nickname is Poppy Bush.
It's funny. Yeah. You know, go ahead.
I do wonder about this quite often. Is that just how exactly do you get to be an American president without being involved in drug trafficking of some kind? I mean, Clinton was involved in it. George Bush Sr. was involved. I'm sure George W. Bush was involved in drug trafficking, even if it was just his own high cocaine level in his bloodstream as he went into the White House. goodness knows what Obama's done. It's just basically, unless you have something to blackmail you on, you don't get to be president.
Of course, you know, and, you know, it's very well documented that these guys are running the whole show. I mean, let's face it, when you have, you know, satellites that are capable of basically reading the face of a dime from space at any given time, and you can't see, you know, these massive operations going on and all this other. I mean, here in the States, we had Wells Fargo last year gets busted laundering, you know, $330 billion, if I'm not mistaken, for the drug cartels down in, you know, Central America and South America. And, you know, they're fined 1% and nobody goes to jail. I mean, it's just the standard operating procedure. You know, I mean, we've got troops over there, you know, growing poppy right now in Afghanistan, for Christ's sake. So it's corrupt system, clearly. We, you know, we know that, so.
Yeah, I love the bar graphs that come out. You know, it's like heroin production under the Taliban in Afghanistan. Nothing. Heroin production before and after the U.S. invasion. Massive! And under U.S. occupation, it's getting even bigger and bigger and bigger every single year. It's like they've gone from, what, between 1% and 0% of the world's opium and heroin supply to, like, 90%.
Yeah, it's roughly 90% less figure I had heard, so, yeah.
This is how they finance all these black ops and operations like, I would imagine, Project Pegasus.
Absolutely. And what's clear is there was different factions within this Quantum Access program. These, you know, the different really factions of Quantum Access capabilities, you know, were out there. And so, you know, according to some other people that have gone on public record about this thing, there was a Catholic faction within the CIA which, you know, had the access to this. And, of course, we know at the highest rung, you know, Catholicism is basically Luciferianism. I don't know what you know about that, but it's clearly true. And so what I believe is that, you know, it's a clear illustration of the different warring factions in that my dad, who was privy to this technology. In fact, the device that he invented, the patent was awarded in 72, is akin to Tesla technology in many respects, in that just sort of harnesses this wasted electromagnetic energy. And so, you know, what seems to be there is there was a Quantum Access faction that had the capability for Quantum Access that was, you know, going and gathering their own intelligence and trying to basically sabotage the efforts of this Nazi faction, which also had this type of capability, and it's still going on today, clearly. And so, you know, one of the things that I'd like to address today has to do with, you know, Operation Paperclip, the scientists that were brought over here, the eugenics program that's been implemented worldwide. And, you know, we've tackled the GMO. Brilliant work on your part, by that. By the way, I saw you out there with your opera singing and all that. I thought that was great. And it's good to know that people are standing together to come over these things. And you know, I would say that mind control is dismissed due to its effectiveness. You know, I tagged you in some videos today on Facebook. And for anybody out there, I'd encourage you to look at some of these videos, which, you know, show physical examples of mind control. And, you know, we live in America today in a weaponized communications grid. You know, in 1996, there was a series of different criteria that was mandated to major telecom companies, all of which, you know, was unconstitutional. It's basically, you know, the back door into the phones where they can triangulate your past and current position. Your web cache can be accessed, all these different things. And, you know, the criteria was mandated in 1996, and the deadline is October of 2001, okay, right after September 11th, which is, you know, a clear telltale sign that they knew this stuff was coming. They knew they could get away with it. And, you know, it's so terrible what they can do now with the different electromagnetic energy and the terror. You know, it's up to terahertz now. And we live in a country here where there's devices known to the World Health Organization in which, you know, people will crawl up into these things to service them with lead suits on to shield them from the radiation. Okay. They're putting these things on the, you know, the public school property in some cases, right out in the open, literally on the playground itself, okay? These things are clearly not to be in the proximity of any of us, and certainly not children. And so we really have to understand why this is going on, why this issue hasn't been addressed, and the severity of the mind control state worldwide is terrible. I mean, we know the fundamental form of mind control would be the flow, you know, the control of the flow of information, you know, via the media and all these other things. And it's nice to see the mainstream media basically going to hell in a handbasket. and all these other people stepping up and taking control of the media. And we are the media now. And so anybody who's trying to do that, I commend them for that. But, you know, this is a major issue. I mean, we have devices known to the World Health Organization on public school property across this country. And, you know, we need to address this issue. I mean, when's the last time you heard a loving parent say, oh, sure, hey, kiddo, go ahead and go play underneath the highly, electromagnetic device for a recess. Go ahead and just go run and play on it. I mean, you're not supposed to tell them to go play in traffic. It's terrible. And so
I did a caption for that. There was this massive cell phone repeater in the middle of a playground, and the caption was Jungle Gym design in the USA goes downhill.
Clearly. And so, you know, the public isn't quite ready to really wrap their minds around what these devices are capable of doing, I don't think. I mean, you know, that is something that, and I don't want to, you know, be condescending when I say that. I mean, you know, a lot of people still can't understand that there's a massive geoengineering program that's been going on in front of their face, and it's a stated objective from the military itself. And they can't even wrap their mind around that. But the bottom line is, if they cause health hazards, they don't need to be there. And, you know, why it hasn't been addressed further is something that is a major issue. It's hard to know where to really begin with this thing. And what's more is there's been a lot of attempts to cover up this type of information. And, you know, I wouldn't know where to begin with the whole situation with, you know, the exopolitical situation. And I don't want to overstep my boundaries on your show or be disrespectful to anybody who's here to defend themselves.
First of all, there really ain't no boundaries on this show outside of the FCC regulations, which means we can't swear. You can talk about anything you want.
I've got a message for the FCC right now, buddy, and that's why in the hell are these towers on playgrounds with your consent? And, you know, I haven't made it any secret about it at all. You know, I'll tag the Federal Communications Commission and American Tower on my Facebook page with one of the most reputable class action attorneys in the world. Okay, at the same time. So everybody's aware about this, and I haven't made any secret. I don't make any bones about it, and I'm not afraid of it, you know. And so, you know, I don't want to, you know, I'm not here to defame anybody. I don't want to make personal attacks on anyone. And so I don't want to switch subjects too quickly. I know we only have an hour, and I can eat an hour up quickly as you can.
Technically my second hour guest might not be showing up today, so you could possibly have two.
Well, I'd love to have to, and I wouldn't know where to begin. I mean, what is it? What do you feel that the audience needs to know about this stuff? And I mean, you know, are we going to cover this Bishago situation and all of that other stuff?
Oh, sure. I mean, my perspective on the Bishago situation, everybody says, oh, no, he's a liar, he's a fraud, and anything else. And my perspective is when they ask for evidence, don't you realize that when you're in court, testimony is evidence? Okay.
Well, absolutely.
And not only is he got vast quantities of it, he's also got many other people who are in the program who, since him coming out and coming public with this, have come out and basically backed up his story. How much more evidence do you need?
That's right. And look, I'm not here to defame him. Okay. And I, you know, he's had some problems, and clearly mind control was a factor in his case, okay, by his own account. And so my personal contention is that Andy hasn't come out of some of those things yet. You know, we did a radio interview together in which I had called him to a debate, okay, because if there's one thing I remember about my dad when I was a kid, it's that you can't forget that you were on Project Pegasus. He would make me repeat it to him over and over and over, Vinny, okay? And, you know, I mean, the corroboration between my father and Andy's father in that situation, I mean, there's so many similarities. It's such strong, corroborative, circumstantial evidence that anybody could take a look at it and see that, you know, we would either have to be complete, total, both of us, you know, schizophrenic maniacs, or we would have had to have been involved in some type of black government project for this circumstantial evidence to be coincidence. And furthermore, I've provided physical evidence, you know, and much of it in the form of video, timestamps, and text, which is very powerful when it comes to the end of this thing. And so, you know, I do an interview with Andy, in which he endorses my research publicly. He apologized to me profusely. And then a couple of days later, he calls the host, Mike Vera, on Late Night in the Midlands, and says, you know, he asked him to remove this show, which is a clear attempt to withhold information. And it seemed to be the catalyst in which he wanted to do that is a very weird twist of events here that just, you know, I really need to help trying to uncover this from the public, because this is another clear attempt to withhold information. You know, I released, you know, I tried to get a hold of Andy first, being that he's the founder of the Mars Anomaly Research Society, which, you know, some of the stuff that they put up is very credible, and they found a lot of stuff. And you've got other people in the group who may be imaginative or whatever. But if one of those pictures is real, then we've identified a human presence on Mars, an Egyptian presence on Mars, etc. And so I really, you know, I try to get a hold of Andy to release the coordinates to the lakes of liquid water. At least there was lakes there at one time, which in and of itself is a major find, a major scientific discovery. And it seems to be that the water is there now. Okay, I tagged you in the pictures of the coordinates themselves, and anybody can go look at that stuff on Google Mars. Is that a break? We'll pick up there then.
Indeed, you do. Eugene Irvin is my guest, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Just bear in mind, this is an entirely listener-supported show, so if you're capable of going to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, clicking the subscribe button for a couple of dollars a month, it'd be much appreciated because we're having a bit of trouble paying the rent right now. We'll be right back.
Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. No taboo topics, ladies and gentlemen. It's very important in this day and age that you aren't afraid to go where others fear to tread. And there's a great quote here from Mark Twain. What does he say there? He says, "It is easier to fool someone." Well, let me turn around the right way. "It is easier to fool people than to convince them that they have been fooled." Isn't that interesting? I love Mark Twain quotes. It's like if you could pick one person throughout history who's a real cynical bastard but seems to get it right most of the time about the human condition and the scumbaggery that afflicts it, Mark Twain. And my very special guest is Eugene Irvin, the living chrononaut. So welcome back, mate. And there's certain information that you've disclosed on other radio shows before, which you said Andy Bishago actually called up the host and said, you know, take it off.
Absolutely. And that whole, you know, it really brings home and illustrates all the points that were made in that interview for anybody who's really paying attention to it. You know, mind control was the basic nature of this program. And, you know, the default psychological programming in the public is a massive thing to contend with. But furthermore, on an individual basis, particularly if we've been in these types of projects, it's very clear that the mind control is there. And one of the things that they'll do is try to keep participants from ever communicating or having any contact with people. And so what I feel personally is that he defaulted to that in an attempt to get this thing off the air, because of that default psychological programming. And so, you know, the basic nature of that was, again, these towers, which is a major issue. I mean, I can't state it enough how mind control is dismissed due to its effectiveness. I don't say that because I think it sounds good. Okay. It's every moment of my waking reality out here, and it's terrible. I mean, what we really have uncovered is they're using the free will of the human organism after seeding it with negative, you know, ideas and feelings in order to bring about a negative manifestation, because there are entities that feed on this stuff clearly. Okay. And so, you know, whatever resonates with somebody, you can call it Lucifer and his angels or demons. You could call it Jinn. You could call it negative energy. You could call it, you know, the yang to the yang, or whatever you want to call it. The bottom line is it's a very clear factor in our world today, and this, you know, the dualistic nature of our reality. And so it's not okay to do this. And what it is, it's a refined Montauk type of technology, which we see being used with school children across the country. And, you know, as far down, I've confirmed independently, as far south as Guatemala, this system is in place and intact. And so,
and by the way, people, Montauk is not a form of Jamaican communication.
You know, for those who aren't familiar with the Montauk Project, you know, the individual who helped really, you know, develop some of the technology and back engineer some of the stuff is a gentleman named Preston Nichols. And to put it in his words, it's a mind amplifier. And, it, you know, it's a two-way street. There's many different ways in which they can do this. But, you know, we're materializing matter through our perception of heavier elements. And what that means is that, we, you know, things are not in a solid state until they're observed by a being. You know, this has been, you know, this is basically the gist of relativity, part of it. And, you know, that's only good up to 3D. I mean, you know, we have CERN reaffirming their findings that, you know, they've made particles go faster than the speed of light. At that point, you really have to bring in a quantum, you know, model of things, and even more into a plasma model of things, which would be the kind of the next dimension of this stuff. And, you know, the bottom line is, in Montauk, what they would do is they would broadcast out people's consciousness that was amplified via electromagnetic energy, and they would broadcast it out after seeding it with negative, you know, ideas and feelings, and literally create with it. And so, and they did this with the same type of technology that you will find in these towers out here today. And, you know, I feel like that's probably, you know, if people don't believe that or not, and that sounds discrediting to any of the further information, you know, just take it at the first level that these devices are known to cause serious health hazards, and they're on, you know, children will go and line up underneath these things at recess. Okay, they're in very close proximity to these things, and so it's a very negative thing. And so we really have to wake up to this thing. It's, you know, GMO, chemtrails, all these things, where we're dealing with a multi-arrayed system of eugenics and mind control, which is ultimately time control. Time is relative to the perspective of the observer. So when our collective perceptions and are seeded with this type of negativity, it has a profound impact on the physical environment in which we are living in today. And so who wants to do something like that is something that, you know, it's made me furious in my life, you know, and you really have to just get to the place where, you know, trying to transfigure your anger into a righteous work by having a voice and getting out there and actually doing something about it. And so, you know, I think we basically left off on the Mars thing. Not to jump around here, but, you know, if there's lakes of liquid water on Mars, that's a huge finding. If NASA's own photographs are proving that, the public has a right to know that, you know, their tax dollars have been paying for this. Or maybe it was the opium money in freaking, you know, Afghanistan. But bottom line,
what's your your tax dollars paid to send the troops over to plant and guard the opium?
What's that? I'm sorry, Randy. What was that? What's my take on it?
See, no. If our tax dollars didn't pay for the NASA program, if it was the opium and everything like that, then it's certainly your tax dollars that are paying all the American troops and CIA operatives that are going over to Afghanistan and planting and guarding and processing the poppy fields anyway.
Exactly. I mean, in one way or another, you know, every dollar, with the dollar being the world currency, has been lent at interest, which perpetuates a cycle of debt that's impossible to get out of mathematically for 100 years this year, since 1913. You know, we've all heard about the Federal Reserve. If you haven't, you know, look it up. The last person who tried to put a U.S. Treasury note into circulation had his head blown off in the city in which I'm in right now, and that was John F. Kennedy. Okay, and so, you know, there's not even anything to back up the money there anyway, is my point. So it doesn't matter if it was tax dollars or opium money or, you know, the child sex slave trade that's going on out there's money. You know, it's all just, you know, it's all a fabrication. So,
yeah, there's just one big gargantuan conspiracy concocted through the means of scumbaggery. And essentially, most people only figure out one branch of this tree, when the reality is there are many branches and deep, deep roots that are even bigger than the branches that you can see.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's been, you know, this is the culmination of, you know, millennia of these people implementing their tactics, and we're dealing with that today. And so, you know, it's difficult to try to come up with ways to overcome this stuff, but clearly boycotting these things, you know, raising awareness about these things. I mean, you know, I'll try to educate mothers about the fact that, you know, fluoride, you know, in a recent Harvard study, I think July of last year, you know, they reaffirm what we've known for decades, the fluoride inhibits neurological development in children and human beings. I mean, it lowers IQ points by the tens of points. You know, and I can go to the store today, Vinny, and look at a gallon of water with, a picture of a baby on it. And on the label there, it'll say with added fluoride, add to formula, et cetera, and all these things. And so it's just sickening to think that, you know, we live in a place where people are intentionally soft killing us for their own, you know, why would they want to do that is something that is, you know, hard to wrap our minds around. And we can't put our own ways of thinking out there when we try to take this into the right context, because these people clearly don't have empathy and they're murderous and they're devils. You know, all, you know, the Jews sat there and waited for a knock on their door and you know, close to, you know, over 6 million of them actually were killed in horrific deaths in concentration camps due to that. And so, you know, I'm not about sitting there and waiting for a knock on the door. And in any way to get this type of information out is an important tool for the people out there. So,
well, everybody knows about the general scheme of things. Yeah, we're fracked. But in terms of your very specific personal experiences, let's say in Project Pegasus, I mean, could you just tell us a wee story about how you got into it and what it was like being in there? You know, describe the jump ropes and whatever.
Sure. You know, my first memory is of, you know, sitting, actually coming out of a Montauk chair in an underground location. Presumably it had concrete walls. There was, you know, lab coats in there with pocket protectors. And I was crying my eyes out at age 3, you know, and trying to really figure out why the words time travel were in one of my first memories as a child has always been something that haunted me. And, you know, clearly my dad's involvement with these, you know, with the nature of his patent, his CIA history, et cetera, and the Catholic, the Catholic aspect to his CIA involvement, clearly all play a role into this thing. That was my link into these things, you know. And I grew up, you know, not really, you know, you're trained not to remember these things, and it's so effective. It's amazing what you can do, but there's a stimulus there and people to where, you know, you'll go and basically execute an op after receiving that stimulus. And there's a variety of different ways in which they could do that. It could be an inaudible transmission from satellite or phone or through the radio in your car. Okay. The technology is that sophisticated. And, you know, I'm actually in an area right now where one of these operations that I was involved in, where I participated in it, and that's actually, I'm in Addison, Texas, which is just north of Dallas, a little suburb here, and there was a National Continuity of Communications exercise in March of 2011 in which, you know, the major telecom companies were working with FEMA, and it was basically a martial law communications network is what some people have called this, and it was installed in its entirety by March 7th of 2011, okay? And nobody was covering the story. I mean, nobody was covering the story. And, you know, there was a huge, you know, there was like 25 to 30, you know, tractor trailers full of communications equipment in a vacant parking lot here. And this is basically a contingency plan. This is for continuity of communications in the event of a disaster. And so I find myself on top. I don't even know why I'm doing this. Why am I covering this story? And, you know, it's one of these ops that you're basically doing. And the thing is the contingency planning for future events based on the foreknowledge of them is one of the prime directives of Pegasus. You know, that's per Andy Bishago. And certainly I can, affirm that fact here today. And so the bottom line is the Fukushima incident was 2 days later. You know, we have the huge earthquake, the subsequent tsunami and Fukushima disaster, and we haven't even begun to come to terms with the ramifications of what that's done today. I mean, this thing, you know, radiation levels were raised across the world for human consumption directly after this event. You know, we saw, you know, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory releases the satellite imagery of all this stuff washing up on the west coast of the United States. And this is a major deal. We're seeing butterflies and livestock and all these other things with mutations over there today. And, you know, this stuff kills people. This is a major, you know, nuclear disaster, which is still happening at this very moment. And, you know, is it a coincidence that there's a National Continuity of Communications exercise in America across this country in conjunction with FEMA 2 days prior to this incident is just a no-brainer. I mean, of course it's not. And so it's run-of-the-mill for us to see the execution of an operation under the guise of an exercise, you know? And so, you know, 9/11, London train bombings, Boston, there's million, you know, there's tons of examples of this. And so from my perspective, this is a form of contingency planning for future events. Okay, that's the nature at the bottom of this conspiracy. You know, we Pegasus is an intelligence gathering operation via quantum access technology. And what we found out is if you change things, you know, say that we stopped 9/11 from happening, okay, for example, all the intelligence that was gathered there via quantum access is nullified due to the fact that the timeline itself changes because the series of events that happened afterwards aren't the same. You know, it's pretty simple. The butterfly effect basically doesn't occur. And so, you know, to contingency plan for these events and to help coax them along in a, you know, a fashion in which we're able to deal with them seems to not negate the intelligence, seems to be able to put us, you know, there's innumerable potentialities of different scenarios that were basically happening all around us at any time that our collective and individual perceptions allow us to enter into, you know, to be able to get into and interface. There are so many different timelines around us that, you know, it's just the very nature of time itself and what our reality is. You know, there's many mansions in my father's house, and I will go and prepare a way before you is a red lettered example of that from a Christian perspective or a follower of Jesus. You know, that's for me, that's a clear interdimensional reference in scripture to put out there for people. And so there's a lot of people, I think, that have a hard time wrapping their minds around this, and that's unfortunate. But, I mean, doesn't it really only make sense that, you know, time travel and these different types of quantum access capability would have arisen and emerged and been weaponized? I mean, you know, Andy makes a brilliant case about that in his testimony with the people on the Manhattan Project and Los Alamos and all these different nuclear physicists and how, you know, teleportation, all these other things were weaponized at that time. And so, you know, you don't want to be able to make this stuff available to everybody, and it makes sense for it to be weaponized to some degree, of course, you know. But, you know, declassifying teleportation, for example, could be a very viable thing for our environment to make a recovery.
Yeah, and I don't know about everybody else, but when you sit in a plane for a really, 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 really long time, like 10 hours or something, you think to yourself, you know, why couldn't we just have a teleport instead of an airport? That'd be really convenient. And it'd actually make all the goods and everything go everywhere quite a lot faster and easier and cheaper and good for the economy, wouldn't it? We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And for those of you who watch the webcam versions on my YouTube channel, Mr. News, Guerrilla Media, I was holding up a picture earlier of the Fukushima radiation leak. It covers the entire fracking Pacific Ocean in red. Okay? The whole ocean. According to the Bible, about a third of the fish will die in the end times. I mean, all you got to do is just nuke at one power plant, and then suddenly it's biblical frickin' apocalypse time, isn't it? That's how scary and serious this is. It's terrifying. And I think that was the one thing that really kind of woke me up, like jolt out of bed, like, oh my God, we're all fracked. Now I need to become a radio show host and expose scumbaggery. So fear's a good motivation as well. Now, we're trying to get Eugene back on the phone. Eugene, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Skype there.
Yeah, we had a bit of problems there straight from the beginning, so that's why I made sure to have your phone numbers and everything all ready, so here we go. So back to Project Pegasus and your involvement with it. Do you recall where you left off?
Yeah, I was in the middle of this continuity of communications exercise. You know, I found myself, you know, interviewing a lady on top of a building that was adjacent to this parking lot that was full of all this communications equipment, and asking her, you know, what they're doing for FEMA. She's up there installing, you know, communications equipment on top of this building. And she says, we're doing an exercise for, quote, a 9/11-style event. Okay, you know, it'll make you the hair stand up on the back of my neck even thinking about it. You know, when I think about FEMA and all of the different things that go off with this, it was just, you know, it was a pretty terrifying experience. And switching timelines will do something to you. You know, it's a weird deal to be able to come into an alternate timeline or even be on the same timeline from which you came at a different point in it. And so, you know, there's been many examples of that in my life. A lot of them I've actually documented on my Facebook page. You know, I've done that pretty thoroughly, actually. I have literally called air cover in, okay, on my Facebook page and documented it coming in with video and posted a corresponding video on my Facebook page, Benny, okay? I mean, for people who think that's outlandish, I can prove it. So, you know, that's not something that you hear every day. And so, you know, it's a weird ballgame out here. You know, the nature of time, the nature of our reality is something that a lot of us don't understand. And the construct of what we, you know, live in is what I would choose to kind of call the template. I don't know if you're familiar with the holographic theory, but basically it was proposed by these two physicists, Braun and I forget the other guy's name. It starts with a P. I always want to say Prim, but I'm not sure what it is. But the bottom line is you can think of the template as kind of the fundamental things that we adhere to in the physical, regardless of our acknowledgement of them or not, kind of like a curve when you're driving down the road, or, you know, the concrete that you're walking on top of, or any of those things. And so that would be the template that we're in. And, you know, it is not relative to our perception. Actually, that's not true. I don't want to confuse people. It's more permeable than what we're led to believe, most certainly, things in the physical. However, it's largely not relative to our perception, and those would be the fundamental things that we do adhere to regardless of our acknowledgement or not from my perspective. You know, you can call that truth if you want to, and I guess, you know, trying to really ascertain what that is what this whole life is supposed to be about, at least for it is, you know, just for me personally. But the rest of our waking reality is largely relative to our perception, and it's so permeable. And the manifestive nature of the human organism is so profound that we have a hard time understanding just how potent it is because we're doing it from a subconscious perspective, you know? And so that fact in and of itself really makes it hard to get past the fact that we're doing it. Being, you know, we all know that we don't, you know, we use a very minimal fraction of our cognitive ability and of our brains. And so, you know, that pretty much, you know, put you there where you're doing all this stuff from a subconscious perspective. And again, we're materializing matter through our perception of heavier elements. And so, you know, everything that we've ever really perceived has not happened outside of us, okay? It's happened inside of the brain through a series of different nerve impulses that are being interpreted. You know, if it's visual, the light comes in through the eye, and then it's interpreted in the brain in the speed of light, you know, naturally in the speed of light. One way in which the human organism can change timelines and alter the perception of time and have time dilation is by being able to step out of that, you know, to change things in the perception faster or slower than the speed of light. That in and of itself is a form of rudimentary time travel. You know, it's not walking through a teleporter or a stargate, but it is a way in which wavelengths are interpreted in a different way in the brain that dilates the time that we're perceiving. And so when we do this collectively, it can have a very profound effect on the timeline in which we're in. And it's very important for us to understand that. And so, you know, mind control equals time control in the rawest sense. And so, you know, when we're being seated with this negativity in our collective subconscious, which is, you know, manifesting our reality to a very large degree around us, it really has profound implications on the physical environments in which we live. And so there's so much more that we're capable of doing, is my point. We really need to be able to understand this. And certainly, you know, I'm not ashamed of the name of Jesus Christ, and I'm not going to sit here and preach to people. I know the church is something that clearly has its problems, and it is one of the fundamental flaws of humankind, okay? But with that said, the word church in Greek means the called out, or the called out ones in some context. And, you know, it seems a blasphemous thing for a lot of us to consider that there will be men on this earth who will do even greater works than Jesus did himself. However, it's clearly written in red letters, which means it came out of his own mouth in John 14:12. And so if we can take that into the proper context, we're talking about, you know, psychic ability. We're talking about manifestation, transmutation. And if those are bad words, if alchemy is a bad word and your vocabulary because of some connotation that you have on it due to an indoctrinated bias, I would encourage whoever you might be to think of things in a different context, because transmutation and an alchemical, you know, manifestation of things is exactly what occurred when water was turned into wine in Scripture, okay? And so those abilities are inherent in the human organism and clearly suppressed and actually used for means in which we don't even understand what we're doing with them. And so that's a major issue. You know, we have people that basically assaulting the psychic energy systems, the chakra systems, the creative centers of the human organism today in this country and across this world on a variety of different levels. Just seeding the mind with negative things via media and all these other things is a terrible thing to do. And when you begin to affect the resonant centers of the human organism, which, you know, the chakra system is a very tangible thing that is a part of the human organism, and chakras all resonate specific frequencies, and they have specific functions. And these are the manifestive psychic centers of the body. And, you know, when we're being assaulted, and the free will of the human organism is being assaulted by the abuse of psychotronic devices, electromagnetic energy, the eugenics program in the food, in the media, with the control of this information, all these other things, it is a miracle. It is a miracle right now that the human organism can even begin to function with the assault that we have been under. And so, you know, I believe that the second coming of Jesus comes back for his body, and that would be every single person out there who is able to, you know, facilitate love with an open heart into their waking moment in the physical reality. And so, you know, these are the things that I've learned on some freaking, you know, black bop government project that basically, you know, am I a rogue? I don't know if I'm rogue or not. You know, I don't know if I'm supposed to be sitting here telling this or what I've overcome or any of it. I just simply know that this is the truth that I have to stand in today and try to bring it to people and hope that something gets done. And I would like to see people really get behind this effort to say, what in the hell are these things doing on playgrounds, these devices? I mean, regardless of if they help manifest or whatever, that doesn't matter, okay? These things cause health hazards, cancer, cognitive disruption, et cetera. These things are weaponized to the sense that, you know, we use them in Iraq. Why do you think all those people came out and basically were, you know, surrendering? It's these psychotronic devices that are able to, you know, use inaudible transmission and other methodologies in order to make people succumb to these devices and the energy and the thoughts that they are basically putting into our head. You know, synthetic telepathy is one of these types of technologies that is real. Okay, I'd refer anybody to, you know, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, it's true. I mean, the brain has a particular frequency, like a certain number of hertz that it communicates between the cells in your brain and stuff like that. And so what they figured out is that if you put a broadcast signal directed at somebody's brain using that same frequency, they can hear your thoughts inside their head.
That's exactly right. And, you know, the human skeletal system acts like an antenna in that fashion. And, you know, what you're talking about is the human resonance.
That's what your DNA is. The DNA strand is a double helix. It's a perfect antenna.
That's right. It's also a form of resonant frequency expenditure in a vast medium in which, you know, we can store information on. And, you know, these devices...
Hold on, Eugene. We're coming to break right now. We'll be back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen, with the second hour with Eugene. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Alert the masses.